This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, November 16, 2011. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up, in Washington, lawmakers debate an anti-piracy bill that critics say would usher in online censorship. Students at California universities protest police action and tuition hikes. And we'll sit down with the leader of the Afghan Liberal Party as a general counsel meets in Kabul. Those stories and more, but first, this news.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. President Obama today announced the U.S. will increase its military presence in Australia. At a press conference, Obama and Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard said most of the buildup will be in the northern part of the country.
Over a number of years, we intend to build on this relationship in a staged way to a full force of around 2,500 personnel. That is a full Marine Air Ground Task Force.
President Obama focused his remarks on military cooperation and humanitarian relief in the region, but the growing presence of China underscores the decision.
Where China is playing by those rules, recognizing its new role, I think this is a win-win situation. There are going to be times where they're not, and we will send a clear message to them that we think that they need to be on track in terms of accepting the rules and responsibilities that come with being a world power.
The Obama administration will begin with an increase of about 250 Marines. According to Voice of America, the U.S. currently has less than 200 military personnel stationed in the country. In just 1 year, the UN Convention banning cluster munitions has led to the destruction of 600,000 cluster bombs across the globe. But a civil society group says a new protocol being pushed by a small group of states to reverse the ban will do more humanitarian harm than good. The Cluster Munitions Coalition released their progress report today. 111 countries have signed the international treaty, yet report editor Steve Goose says a small group of nations led by the United States is pushing to change the protocol to allow for continued use.
There will be some that are banned by this protocol, but it allows maybe two-thirds of existing arsenals to still be used. If you have a new specific law that says it's okay to use these things, we think that will facilitate use. It might even encourage use. So we think that overall the protocol will do more humanitarian harm than good, that it could lead to increased civilian casualties and increased socioeconomic devastation.
The U.S. defends its position, saying destroying its stockpile of cluster bombs would put U.S. soldiers at risk, and that the bombs, quote, can often result in much less collateral damage than other weapons. In other weapons news, the U.S. is considering a deal to sell large so-called bunker-busting missiles to the United Arab Emirates. In addition, the U.S. this week revealed a new and much larger bunker buster, a 30,000-pound bomb designed to destroy deeply buried targets. The recent announcements come in the wake of revelations about Iran's nuclear capabilities. After Occupy Wall Street protesters were evicted Tuesday from their camp in New York City, protesters in several cities around the world are facing similar issues. Today in the UK, City of London officials posted eviction notices on dozens of tents pitched outside St. Paul's Cathedral. The notice gives the protesters until Thursday at 6 p.m. to move or face legal action. The protesters are currently camped on land belonging to the City of London Corporation and St. Paul's, but according to the BBC, only the tents on the city land were given notice. Occupy Toronto protesters have faced a similar challenge from authorities receiving eviction notices yesterday. A city official spoke at a press conference announcing the decision.
Two things have come together. The first is the public's desire to reclaim their park. And the other is that we have a park that we have to prepare for the winter.
But soon after the announcement, a Canadian judge ruled the protesters could not be removed without a court hearing. That hearing has now been scheduled for Friday. Seattle police used pepper spray against protesters Tuesday evening at an Occupy march downtown. In the process, they sprayed a pregnant woman, a priest, and an 84-year-old woman, who were all taking part in the action, according to local media reports.
This is what police state looks like! This is what police state looks like!
Video footage posted on YouTube shows a chaotic scene, including a police line blocking the progress of the march and protesters attempting to help other protesters who had been sprayed. Police say protesters were attempting to block traffic and were told to move before deploying the spray. 6 people were arrested. The crackdown follows a Seattle City Council resolution passed earlier this week supporting the 99%. And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
I'm Dorian Marina in Los Angeles. In Washington today, the U.S. House Judiciary Committee took up a controversial anti-piracy bill. Industry groups such as the Motion Picture Association and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce say it would help protect copyright laws. But critics warn the measure could allow censorship of the internet and curb free speech, not just in the U.S., but across the globe. FSRN's Matt Laszlo reports on the debate from the Capitol.
Guilds and unions representing musicians, filmmakers, and producers say their creations are being sold by counterfeiters across the globe, and they want it stopped. The Republican chair of the Judiciary Committee, Lamar Smith of Texas, says the U.S. Congress should step in and end internet piracy.
We cannot continue a system that allows criminals to disregard our laws and import counterfeit and pirated goods across our physical borders.
Smith and a bipartisan group of lawmakers are pushing a bill called the Stop Online Piracy Act. It's supported by the Chamber of Commerce as well as drug companies. But opponents, including a bipartisan group of lawmakers, say the legislation is too broad and gives companies and the government too much power to shut down legitimate internet operations. Smith only allowed one opponent of the bill to testify, so California Democratic Congressperson Zoe Lofgren shared with her colleagues a lengthy list of opponents.
The letters are from the Consumer Union and other consumer groups, TechNet, Tech America, the American Library Association, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Human Rights Watch.
Supporters of the bill say it's just wealthy tech companies, such as Google and Facebook, that are lining up to oppose the bill. But Lofgren says that's not the whole picture.
The big tech companies weren't the ones who said this bill would cause the U.S. to lose its position as a global leader in supporting a free and open internet. That's from dozens of human rights groups around the world.
Civil liberties groups worry the bill could stifle free speech by giving too much power to regulators to censor content they disagree with under the guise of protecting intellectual property. Catherine Oyama handles copyright legal issues for Google, which opposes the legislation.
You know, I think short of the constitutionality, it certainly raises free speech concerns.
The legislation allows the U.S. Attorney General to order search engines to block certain websites that it deems as breaking copyright laws. California Republican Congressperson Daryl Issa also opposes the bill. He says there's currently in place courts to deal with copyright laws that are sufficient to handle internet cases, too.
I object to this bill in its current form, mostly because I believe it fails to use tools that are generally better than the tools that we have at our disposal in this bill.
Opponents also say the legislation will crush innovation by locking startups in litigation over intellectual property rights. Under the bill, any website that contains even a little bit of content that infringes on a copyright can be legally challenged and halted by the U.S. Attorney General, which could take years and tens of thousands of dollars to defend. Texas Democratic Congressperson Sheila Jackson Lee says the legislation could hurt the little guy.
I am concerned about how this bill will, what effect it will have on small businesses, particularly those that couldn't afford to go to court should a rights holder come forward and demand that their access to revenue be shut off. If a rights holder accuses a small business website of facilitating infringement.
But Committee Chair Smith says the legislation is all about protecting the intellectual property of creators in the U.S.
This bill focuses not on technology, but on preventing those who engage in criminal behavior from reaching directly into the U.S. market to harm American consumers.
Many Democrats also support the legislation because they say glaring abuses are taking place daily online. John Conyers is the highest-ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee. He says it's vital to protect the creation of innovators.
And to those who say that a bill to stop online theft will break the internet, I'd like to point out that it's not likely to happen.
But critics such as Jackson Lee say the legislation goes too far in the other direction.
I think immediately what comes to mind is that this legislation may be overly broad, that it too easily circumvents internet users, and it is inherently incompatible with the way internet actually works.
A similar bill is also winding through the Senate, and observers say both seem to have a lot of support in Congress. Matt Laszlo, FSRN, Washington.
Today in Long Beach, California, students protested a vote at the California State University Chancellor's Office to approve a tuition hike, the third increase in the statewide system within a year. The protests coincide with rallies throughout the university system, drawing attention to fee hikes and privatization. Protesters also highlighted police violence at the UC Berkeley campus. Yesterday, Berkeley classes moved outside, discussion circles formed around campus, and thousands marched and rallied throughout the day. In the evening, students triumphantly reestablished a camp that police had demolished 1 week prior. From KPFA in Berkeley, Brian Edwards-Tiekert has more.
Here's what happens when students at UC Berkeley call a general strike. In the morning, professors take their classes outside, and students circle for teach-ins on everything from the prison system to the nature of revolution.
In between, there is another group, between the exploited and the dispossessed. They are, we might call them, the precariat. They're you.
English majors march through there campus, you. Chanting lines from Allen Ginsberg's Howl. And during the lunch hour, thousands surround a campus choral group performing in the main plaza.
The occupation's coming and it won't be long.
I can't tell you how exciting all this actually is. There is art everywhere. There's music. There is dancing. There are people learning. There are people listening. There are people speaking. I mean, it should be like this every day.
Michael Cohen is a lecturer in American Studies and African American Studies. He says the fact that the UC Regents have canceled the meeting they had set for today shows how much of an impact the student protests are having.
Out of sheer fear of having to face their own constituencies, they have caved and hidden. And if I will tell you this, if they can't have a meeting at UCSF Mission Bay, which is a fortress, it was built with thwarting protest in mind. It is an absolute fortress disguised as an institution of higher learning. If they can't meet at Mission Bay, then they can't meet anywhere.
Students called this general strike after their first attempts to set up an occupation were greeted with this. Campus police beating and arresting protesters who had linked arms around tents in front of UC Berkeley's administration building. Afterwards, Chancellor Robert Bergineau sent out an email saying that the students' decision to link arms was, quote, not nonviolent civil disobedience. A week later, Corinne Von May was gathering signatures on a petition asking for his resignation.
I was really offended by Chancellor Bergineau's email that we all received, his negligence in not responding to the violence.
In the afternoon, a march through downtown Berkeley stretched five blocks long.
My name is Marisol. I'm out here because I'm attending a public university. I do not want to pay the price for a private university.
My name is Mark, and I'm here because my little brother won't be able to afford school.
This public education, it should not be more expensive than what it is right now.
The same night as the strike, the annual Mario Savio Memorial Lecture was scheduled to take place. The event honors the most iconic leader of Berkeley's free speech movement. Organizers moved the lecture from an auditorium to the same steps from which Savio had addressed thousands of students 47 years prior. This year's speaker, former U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich.
The fundamental problem is that we are losing equal opportunity in America. We are losing the moral foundation stone on which this country and our democracy are built.
Some estimates put the crowd during Reich's speech at over 10,000. Students set up tents in the middle of the crowd. After the speech came music. Hundreds stayed through the night, surrounding the tents, dancing. In the center of it all, Dilip Ramandran was inside a tent with a textbook open in his lap.
People are willing to stand up for as long as it takes to get rid of the fee hikes and get rid of the problems with the banks and student loans and I think all the other Occupy problems that people support in other Occupy movements.
The students are racking up victories. University officials have already taken a proposal for fee hikes off the table. The UC Berkeley chancellor has dropped all charges against those arrested during last week's occupation protest. And fearing mass demonstrations, the UC regents have canceled a meeting that was to take place in San Francisco today. Organizers say they'll still bus hundreds of students into the city. They'll join marches and direct actions at financial institutions set for this afternoon. Brian Edwards Tiekert, Free Speech Radio News at Occupied UC Berkeley.
Hi, this is Jess Burns. I'm one of FSRN's headlines editors. Who do you trust to tell you the real story? An editor in the glass-walled Manhattan office or an independent reporter on the scene? A beltway bloviator or an ordinary person telling her own story? Free Speech Radio News doesn't go to the usual suspects to bring you the news. We go to the grassroots. Our reporter collective gives you clarity in the chaos. Remember, other news organizations dispatch reporters around the globe. Ours already live there. Visit us online at fsrn.org to find out how you can help.
In Afghanistan, leaders from across the country met in Kabul today for a general council meeting despite threats of insurgent attacks. The four-day Loya Jirga began under tight security. President Hamid Karzai called for the Assembly of Elders to discuss the future of U.S. troops in the country, including permanent bases. Although some Afghan leaders questioned the credibility of the gathering and a few planned to boycott it, others welcomed Karzai's insistence that controversial U.S. night raids, which have killed many civilians, need to end. To find out more about the discussion and the politics of the meeting, FSRN's Bilal Jawad spoke to the leader of the Afghan Liberal Party, Ajmal Suhail.
Dear Ajmal Suhail, the leader of the Liberal Party of Afghanistan, first, thank you very much for giving the time to FSRN. My first question is, as you heard Hamid Karzai's inaugural speech today in the Loya Jirga, what were the most important points in his speech?
Regarding the strategic relation with the United States that he discussed, he said that Afghanistan has a broad-based relation with the several countries around the globe, especially with the neighboring countries. In spite of there are some oppositions, or in spite of the relation that some of the countries do not have a good relation with the United States, but we have still. As I understand that, if we have a relation with the Iran, so we should neglect United States, because the national security and the national interest of Iran in the United States in the region, they are contradicting. Secondly, he said about the basis that, as far as I think, that the Afghan sovereignty and Afghan national interest, should be followed or should be respected in Afghanistan. He concerns the capitulation, so it's okay, then the Afghan people, everybody wants it, that any American or any circle of American do something wrong against the law of Afghanistan, he should be brought to the court of Afghanistan, not the United States or elsewhere. Or if he think beyond that, so I think that if the United States want to establish their bases in Afghanistan, of course they have their special interest. So if they leave all the interest and only support a failed state government, it's impossible.
Thank you. You know better, presence of U.S. military in Afghanistan beyond 2014 is a sensitive issue, as you said, for neighboring countries like Iran, Pakistan, China, and even far Russia. So don't you think they will probably try to make obstacles against this possibility through their influence among the influentials who are now participated in this Jirga?
As far as I understand, these countries think that the United States is under rent. If we pressure today the Afghan government or some of the circles or groups in Afghanistan, it may make it possible for their interest or to push or pull out the United States from Afghanistan. If the United States want to establish their stable position in Afghanistan, especially their long-term military bases in Afghanistan, then Pakistan, Iran, Russia, all these countries, they will understand that United States is neither underrun nor leave Afghanistan. For that reason, they will rediscuss the issue, and I'm sure peace and stability will be back to Afghanistan.
Yeah, thank you very much. On the other hand, domestically, Taliban and other insurgents groups inside Afghanistan are also against the presence of U.S. military. Won't they try their best to create a lot of security problems for this Jirga?
They have called several times that even they warned some of the participants not to participate or take part in the Loya Jirga whatsoever. But as far as we understand that no a single incident has happened yet, and we hope that in the upcoming days there wouldn't be any something strange happen to the moving on of this Jirga.
Yeah, thank you. Again, as far as the presence of U.S. Troops in the form of U.S. permanent military bases are concerned, there is a big confrontation between the government of Afghanistan and parliament. And today, they say that the parliament has wide representation in this Jirga. So what do you think? Will it get support from the Jirga?
As far as some of the information shows, I mean, the behind-scenes information shows that Iran, Pakistan, and maybe some other countries tried the most that they would have their own elements within the Jirga. The idea is to block and to stop that relation, I mean, the future, our upcoming Afghan security relation with the United States. We cannot ignore it. But as far as I understand it, the president has said that we are ready to have that bases in Afghanistan, but we have some conditions. Maybe if the conditions are not so strong, especially if the idea of the capitulation would be discussed, for sure that would be refused, and United States will have a huge refusal on that, because even in Iraq they discussed that matter. In Iraq they didn't vote for and didn't help that position, and so that the United States said that we will withdraw from Iraq. Beyond that, if there would be a 50-50 position or the interest of both countries paid highly attained or attention for, and I'm sure that the Jirga will support it.
Yeah, thank you very much. My last question, there are reports that the government will try to include some secret issues in the agenda as well. For instance, the change in the governmental structure, I mean the amendment in the Afghan constitution to create a prime minister position for Hamid Karzai when he will be leaving office as a president by 2014. How do you look to this issue?
President Karzai, he himself never discussed that matter, but I am sure there would be some group or some circles or factions within the Loya Jirga that they will also discuss that matter, and maybe by chance, and show to the entire world that it was by chance. Of course, President, he loves the power, he loves to be a president, and he loves to remain in power, so he will use every circumstance and every opportunity to stay in power.
That was Afghan Liberal Party leader Ajmal Suhail speaking to FSRN's Bilal Jawad about this week's Loya Jirga taking place in Kabul. You're listening to FSRN. Join us this week for a special interview with author and activist Arundhati Roy.
What is it that connects the Wall Street occupation to the people in the forest?
Roy's new book, Walking with the Comrades, brings a first-hand account of the hidden side of corporate greed in the forests of India, and she connects it to the worldwide protests taking place in cities across the globe.
What connects it is absolute exclusion of the majority of the people in the world for the obscene benefit of a very few.
Join us for a conversation with Arundhati Roy about her time with the Maoist guerrillas in the forests of India. That's Thursday on FSRN. The credit ratings agencies that were at the heart of the subprime mortgage meltdown in the U.S. are now coming under fire for their role in Europe's debt crisis. Officials say they need to curb the powerful influence of a handful of private companies in the market, and they're proposing new measures to regulate the agencies. But those in the financial service industry say the move doesn't address the central problem and could harm Europe's troubled economy. From France, FSRN's Liam Moriarty has more.
Credit ratings agencies essentially analyze the risk involved in buying an investment. They look at a company or a bond sale or even a country and grade it on its financial strength and creditworthiness. Financial experts say the agencies perform a crucial function by providing information that encourages more and better investments. Martin O'Donovan is with the Association of Corporate Treasurers in London.
If you're an investor and you don't have quite enough information to be sure about what you're investing in, to compensate you, you'll demand a higher rate of interest. If you've got good information, then you'll be prepared to accept a lower rate of interest.
The big three ratings agencies, Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch, control nearly 95% of the global market. In the U.S., the big three put gold standard AAA ratings on packages of risky mortgages, allowing them to be sold for top dollar. When those mortgages went bad, it created a domino effect that collapsed the housing market and cratered the global economy. In Europe, even the rumor of a ratings downgrade has triggered sharply higher borrowing costs for countries such as Portugal, Spain, and Ireland. Michel Barnier is the commissioner for the EU's internal market. Speaking through an interpreter during a press conference Tuesday in Strasbourg, France, Barnier said hastily issued ratings downgrades have complicated Europe's sovereign debt crisis.
Ratings which are dropped just like that with no explanation at the last minute can increase the instability of the situation.
Barnier announced a series of proposed laws which seek to tame the ratings agencies and reduce what he calls over-reliance on their ratings.
We need to rebuild our political sovereignty so that we're not subject to the sovereignty of the markets. That's how it works in modern democracies.
Among the proposals are rules that would require companies to change ratings agencies every few years to prevent excessively cozy relationships that could lead to conflicts of interest. They would also make agencies legally liable for investor losses if their ratings turn out to be incorrect. To say the financial industry is unhappy with the rules would be an understatement.
The proposals that the Commission is coming up with are very fundamental and very radical.
Martin O'Donovan with the Association of Corporate Treasurers.
It would turn the ratings industry into something completely different and actually destroy the current structure of the industry.
O'Donovan warns the new rules could backfire, causing investor confidence to plummet and drying up money in the markets just as it's most needed. But some say the new rules don't get at the heart of the problem. Thierry Philipponin is with Finance Watch, a Brussels-based nonprofit that lobbies for the public interest in financial regulations. Philipponin says the ratings agencies have become so influential that they distort the market.
Depending on the rating issued by effectively, let's face it, three big rating agencies that we know today, everybody must make the same decisions at the same time. It has the same impact on everybody.
Philipponin says that lopsided influence has put the ratings agencies in the position of driving decisions about the viability of entire European countries, a position he says shouldn't belong to them.
How did we find ourselves in a situation where financial markets, which are supposed to bring what it takes for society and for corporations to function properly, have become the actor that has the role of knocking countries down?
The proposed new rules must be passed by the European Parliament and approved by all 27 EU member countries. Strong opposition will come from the United Kingdom, which tries to protect London's place as Europe's premier financial center. Liam Moriarty, FSRN, Normandy, France.
And that's the program for today. The newscast was produced by Catherine Kopp. Thanks for listening. In Los Angeles, I'm Dorian Marina.